From the Gospel of John. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with perfume and wiped his feet with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent a message to Jesus.
Lord, he whom you love is ill.
But when Jesus heard it, he said,
This illness does not lead to death. Rather, it is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it.
Accordingly, though Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, after having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to his disciples,
Let us go to Judea again.
The disciples said to him,
Rabbi, the Jews were just now trying to stone you, and are you going there again?
Jesus answered,
Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Those who walk during the day do not stumble, because they see the light of this world. But those who walk at night stumble, because the light is not in them.
After saying this, he told them,
Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to awaken him.
The disciples said to him,
Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will be all right.
Jesus, however, had been speaking about his death, but they thought that he was referring merely to sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly,
Lazarus is dead. For your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him.
Thomas, who was called the twin, said to his fellow disciples,
Let us also go, that we may die with him.
When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him while Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus,
Lord, if you had been there, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him.
Jesus said to her,
Your brother will rise again.
Martha said to him,
I know he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day.
Jesus said to her,
I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?
She said to him,
Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world.
When she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary and told her privately,
The teacher is here and is calling for you.
And when she heard it, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. The Jews who were with her in the house consoling her saw Mary get up quickly and go out. They followed her because they thought that she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him,
Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died.
When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said,
Where have you laid him?
They said to him,
Lord, come and see.
Jesus began to weep, so the Jews said,
See how he loved him.
But some of them said,
Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?
Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said,
take away the stone.
Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him,
Lord, already there is a stench because he has been dead 4 days.
Jesus said to her,
Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?
So they took away the stone, and Jesus looked upward and said,
Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me.
When he had said this, he cried with a loud voice,
Lazarus, come out.
The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them,
Unbind him and let him go.
Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what Jesus did, believed in him. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
As we have followed these long narratives through John's gospel, here in worship on Sunday morning and through this year's Lenten devotional book written by our members, I hope that you have noticed three things in particular. First, the cast of characters has increased in size considerably. From that first midnight conversation between Nicodemus and Jesus, to the woman at the well with Jesus, witnessed by the disciples and verified by a group of Samaritans, to last week's story of the man born blind, which included the disciples and the Pharisees, plus the blind man's parents and neighbors. Secondly, and this is related to the increased number of people gathering around Jesus, the tension is mounting. As the crowd size increases, so does the danger for Jesus as he makes his way toward the agonizing passion of his betrayal, trial, and crucifixion. Third, as Jesus moves through the gospel, his identity as the Son of God becomes more and more powerfully revealed. With Nicodemus, that revelation simply comes from the lips of Jesus, telling Nicodemus he is the personification of God's love for the world. Then his gift of living water to the woman at the well becomes a truth received by many others who come to believe in him. When he heals the man born blind, his words become action, revealing his identity as a performer of miracles. And today's story is the culminating revelation of Jesus possessing a power reserved for God alone. Today, in Bethany, the whole village is there. And we have moved close to Jerusalem, within walking distance, actually, where all too soon there will be throngs of people in an uproar shouting, "Crucify him!" At the beginning of this fourth encounter, Jesus had been notified that Lazarus was seriously ill, but he had taken his time to get there. He literally orchestrated a delay, and when he got there, it was too late. Lazarus was dead. The funeral was over. The body was in the tomb. It had been in the tomb for 4 days. Even the beautiful language of the King James Version cannot clean up this scene. It says of Lazarus, he stinketh. Now we in our modern day culture have managed to take the stench of death away. No longer does a body of a beloved family member stay at home to be cleaned and prepared for burial. A while back, an article in The Economist took up the high price of funerals with this reflection: a weakening of organized religion coupled with the breakdown of the family means that the traditional funeral is on decline. So in its place, the idea of boosting revenues through more elaborate funerals can reach an extent which defies parody. One American undertaker, for example, apparently offers a coffin fitted with a mobile telephone, air conditioning, a light, and a computer toy, all in case the corpse revives. I experienced something like this once when I served a church in Atlanta years ago at the city's most prominent funeral home. I was doing what pastors do when we are invited by families to help them navigate not only the spiritual dimensions of death, but sometimes the practical ones as well. The family and I had talked about scripture readings, music for the service, the kinds of things about the deceased that I would lift in a prayer of thanksgiving for a long life well lived. Then we went together to view the body in preparation for receiving friends for the public viewing later that evening. Even this old tradition has become nearly obsolete. On this particular occasion, I also went with the family to pick out the casket. They wanted something simple and natural looking, made of wood. We got, however, the whole spiel, from the least expensive to the top of the line. The last coffin we viewed was their most deluxe, costing back then more than $10,000, as I remember it. The undertaker was quite enamored with the guaranteed water seal, the silken inner lining, and the shiny, durable metal exterior. At the culmination of his description of the coffin, he said, "If this thing had wheels, you could take it out of here and drive it down Spring Street." By then, we'd all had enough of this. And one of the family members between me and the undertaker stroked the chrome handle of this Cadillac of coffins and said simply, "Yep, but the driver of this baby is dead." Lazarus was dead. John's gospel is not unlike our stories of death. There is the illness that leads to the final breath. There is the shock of someone so deeply loved that is now gone. There are the sad repetitions of the what ifs. If only you had been here. If only you had come sooner. If only. There is the crowd of family and the crowd of friends gathering around to comfort the sisters, to grieve together, and to hold vigil like we all do when a person we love dies. There are tears in this story too, as there are tears in our stories. Not only Mary's tears and Martha's tears, but also Jesus' tears. We know that Jesus was close to this family, closer than to any of his other companions. It was to their home where he went when he was tired. They fed him when he was hungry. Mary and Martha are like sisters to Jesus, and today their brother has died, and their grief is palpable, and Jesus joins them in their tears. Holy, compassionate tears. God's own grief in the face of death is streaming down the face of Jesus. The story washes over us with all the familiarity of what it's always like when someone we love dies. It is a universal human experience for every human being in this world that God so loves. In the Buddhist culture, there is a tale about a woman whose child has died. In her agony, she went to the local guru and begged him to give her her child back. Of course, he replied with a challenge. Just bring me back one grain of rice from a household that has escaped the pain of grief. She ran to the cottage next door and to the next one after that and to all the cottages in the village, in each one, hearing of another's grief, another's loss. She did not get her child back, of course, but she learned something of great value. She learned that life, by definition, is often struggle. And suffering its frequent cost, and death its final price. Through her own tears of grief and desperation to reverse her course, she learned compassion and empathy toward the suffering of others. She learned she could drink from any bitter cup without becoming bitter herself, because it was a cup shared by all who ever lived. In the raising of Lazarus, what we discover is that God is willing to join us in that shared experience of death, of losing someone we love forever. But in the raising of Lazarus, we also learn that when we face death, we do so with hope, because of Jesus. This story is the prelude to Jesus' own death, and it points to the postlude of his crucifixion, which is the never-ending hope of resurrection. When Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead, remember, he is only 2 miles from Jerusalem. The disciples had warned him against going to Bethany because the plot to kill him has grown in volume and intensity. Bethany is too close to Jerusalem for Jesus' own good. It is a dangerous place for him to be. The opposition to Jesus has been marshaling forces, and his enemies wait for only one last deed to make their case and to be done with this man. So in John's gospel, the raising of Lazarus is the pivotal event that leads to the cross. It seals Jesus' fate. But it also points beyond the certainty of death for Jesus and for all of us. For the sake of the crowd standing around, we are told, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." Then the dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, his face wrapped in burial clothes. Jesus said to the people, "Unbind him and let him go." Jesus says of Lazarus, "This illness does not lead to death. Rather, it is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified in it." New Testament scholar Fred Craddock says, "For Jesus to call Lazarus out of the tomb is to put himself in the tomb." When he screamed into that tomb, "Lazarus, come out," he yelled loudly. The Greek word here means to scream as a woman might scream in childbirth, to howl as an animal might howl in the forest, to shriek as one in great pain might cry out. It takes a lot to call the dead back to life. All of Jesus' life was concentrated in that one scream. And it cost him all he had to give. It foreshadows Jesus' own death, but it foreshadows something else too. Here in Lent, a couple of weeks before Easter, we are already given a clue about Easter. The resurrection of Jesus is not just something that happens to Jesus. Because of Lazarus, we know it is an event that also happens to us. Friends, we too cannot go from house to house and ever find a grain of rice from another human being who has not suffered the death of a loved one or faced down one's own death. But because we have become witnesses to the raising of Lazarus, we can go about our daily lives with the full knowledge that the great God of all creation in the person of Jesus Christ enters our humanity unto death so that we are never alone in ours. We are never, never alone in death. We are accompanied by God and always, always with hope in the resurrection. Amen.